semi-unexpected trip to Arkansas. Any trip that I make to Arkansas will be unexpected, I can assure you. But he asked me if I would fill in tonight and teach a class on worry, which we've been going through each week for, I think, about the last six weeks or so. But he wants to continue in the book that we've been studying. So he said, just teach anything you want to, as long as it's about worry. And that was his mistake. Because we will look at some things tonight that you probably have never encountered before. And I have studied hard all week. I promise you not. To come up with something that would be just a little bit different and still make it a legitimate Bible class. Before we get started tonight, I'm going to ask Robert if he will to lead us in a word of prayer. Amen. Thank you, Robert. I have a list of about 20 scriptures that I want to give you tonight. So if you do truly have a pen or pencil and a piece of paper or something to write on, I will try to work those in. And if time does not allow us to do that, I'm going to stop about 2 or 3 minutes before the end of the class, and I'm going to give you those scriptures so that you will have them. About 20 or 25, depending on what version of the Bible you use. If you use a reference index at all, you'll be able to look those up for yourself. But one in particular that I am fond of, that you wouldn't think would apply to worry and anxiety, is Psalms 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? You know, we worry about the least little thing. And I think that applies to all of us. I'm past 65 years old now, and I can tell you that for 50 years of my life, I worried about something on a daily basis. But I learned how to control my worry. Believe it or not, as dumb as I am, I attacked worry through the psychology of worry. If my mind can play a trick on me, I can play a trick on my mind. Raise your hand if you believe that. Y'all are crazy. Anybody raise your hands crazy? She's double crazy. It's true. You can trick your mind into believing something else. When I was 30 years old, I'd be driving down the road, still listening to the radio at age 30. I haven't listened to the radio since I was about 35, but listening to the radio, listening to those oldie but goodie songs that I heard when I was in high school, I would hear a song and I would immediately know who I was with. My wife is not in here tonight. Who I was with and what I was doing at the time I first heard that song. How many of you have ever heard the song, My Girl? It's a good old song. Every time I hear that song, I put myself in Asheville, North Carolina, Blue Ridge Mountains, as a YMCA counselor. Played that song every night because it came out in about 1966 or 67. And so it was a popular song. I can walk outside of my house in the springtime and smell honeysuckle growing on a tree right outside my front door. And it takes me back to a time in my childhood when we had honeysuckle growing on the fence. I was maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years old, but my mind tells me and takes me to that place. So if my mind can treat me like that, maybe I can do something to treat it the way I want it to be treated. For example, Lewis knows this. After Alabama wins the national championship every year, being from Alabama, and before NASCAR starts at the Daytona 500, I'm in a deep depression. I mean, it's terrible. Gets dark at 4:30. Too cold to do anything outside. And so I will read 2 or 3 books a week. But the way I trick my mind is, and you're not going to believe it, y'all going to think I'm crazy. I put on suntan lotion. I smear it all over my legs, all over my arms, and I get that copper tone smell going. And where does that copper tone smell take me to? Takes me to the beach, does it not? I don't go to the beach in December. I go to the beach when it's warm and sunny. And so my mind eases from that depression because I just take a whiff. And I can smell that summertime coming on. I just know it's right around the bend. So I can trick my mind that way. I had my first educational experience as a substitute teacher. I was going to Navarro College. This is about 1975. I'd been 3 years in the Army and worked for a year and a half, and I'd started back to school, and I was at taking Navarro College courses 4 days a week, and on Friday, they didn't have classes on Friday back then. On Friday, I was substitute teacher at Ennis High School, Ennis Junior High School, one of those places. Had a little boy, got the hiccups in class. And I knew it was real. I mean, you know, you can tell when somebody's fake hiccup, but it was disturbing the class, and it happened to be a science class, so I just reached over and put the plug in the sink and started running the water. And I got two young men to come up. I got a little stool because he's a little short dude, and I was going to bring him up, and with all that water and those two guys that were going to help me, he just knew that I was going to put his head underwater. Now, in 1975, you could probably get away with that, but I wouldn't do it anyway. I wouldn't touch one of them as a substitute. I've touched a few as a full-time teacher, but not in the head. And immediately the hiccup stopped. And I said, okay, well, if I can do that just by running water, let's see what happens if I have a child who has a hiccup. Say, Gary has a hiccups, and stand up, Gary. It ain't gonna hurt you. And he has a hiccups, and I'm going to tell him, I want you to look me in the eye. I don't want you to blink. Do not blink. Hiccup. Hiccup. They're gone. They've stopped just like that, if he's got any sense at all. And Gary does. I have done that all my life. I've even done it to my wife and my child. It has never failed that I can do that. That's tricking the mind. Even a physical thing that goes on in your body can be controlled through the psychology of the mind. And worry is another one of those things that can be tricked. The biggest two words in the language that we have, that we use all the time, is what if. What if? What if I die tomorrow? What will happen to my wife? What will happen to my kids? How will they get along? But we always start the sentence with what if. Well, let me ask you this. How many in here can predict the future? How many of you know what's going to happen tomorrow? Anyone? No. Simply because that is not a gift that God gave us. We don't have the gift of being able to predict what tomorrow will bring. So my suggestion to you would be, how many of you worry, first of all? Raise your hand if you worry. The rest of you are lying if you don't raise your hand. All of us worry about something. I worried about finances for years. You know, I mean, are we going to have enough money to send our kid to college or you know, whatever it is? You know, we could always make the bills. There wasn't anything left over after we paid the bills, but we could always pay the bills. But we always worry about something. And so what we need to do is we need to figure out what's real and what's not. And so how you defeat worry is, and my suggestion to you is this. Every time you ask yourself or you begin to have a doubt about your future, that's worry. First of all, that's what it is. A doubt about your future. I want you to take out your pen and paper and write that worry down. Write it down. And then when something else happens, I want you to write that worry down too. And I want you to make you a list of your worries over about a period of about a week. And then I want you over on the right-hand side of your paper, I want you to tell yourself or ask yourself this. Can I fix this problem? Can I fix it? Is this something that I can deal with? Give an example. I got an old truck, 2006 model. Got 36,000 miles on it. Takes me from my house to the golf course. 2.5 miles and home twice a week for 13 years. Tires, 13 years old. So I begin to worry about those tires. My kids are building a new house in Aubrey, Texas. I know that every time I go up there, I'm going to have to bring something that they can't afford to buy, right? That's what happens. You know, got an extra lawnmower? Yeah, bring it, Daddy. Weed eater? Yeah, bring it. So I can't go in my car, I got to go in my truck. And so I'm worried about how I'm going to get from Lindale to Aubrey, Texas, on tires that are 13 years old. So I go to Ed's in-law, Charlie Norman, and I say, "Charlie, I got these tires 13 years old. I got to do something about this." He said, "Well, come on down here. We'll swap you some tires that are worse than yours for $100. But they're only 3 years old." And sure enough, I go to Charlie. And I get four tires that are about as good as my others are. They only got 36,000 miles on a $65,000 tire. For a $100 bill. I get in that thing, boy, they're just... I mean, it's like driving a brand new truck. I'm not worried about those tires anymore. I can fix that problem. Now I'm asking you, do you have a worry that can be fixed? Can you fix it? If you can't fix it, what do? You quit worrying about it, or you worry about it more? You see, that's what happens a lot of the time. How many of you ever heard the term fight fire with fire? What does that mean? Somebody explain that to me. That's right. That's right. You see fire coming at you, you set a fire in front of it that you can control, and it's going to burn out and use up all the fuel for that fire coming at you. Fighting fire with fire, right? That's what they did back in the plains years ago. So you have to fight fire with fire. You have to take the initiative on that worry. If you think about that worry all the time, you've got to address it head on. Because if you don't, it's going to keep on nagging you. It's very difficult to prove that something won't happen, isn't it? You can't prove that it won't happen. And you can't prove that it will happen until the time gets there. You see, we are all bound up with emotions. We let the emotional side of our brain control our physical bodies. We're worried about our children. We're worried about our grandchildren. And you think there's a problem with them? You think they care? No. I got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. They don't care. You know, they will jump off the roof if you ask them to. They don't worry about stuff like that. But we worry about it. And so we let our emotions control our physical bodies. Now let me ask you this. Can worry make you sick? Physically? You betcha. You betcha it can. So how do you prevent that? You tell me. What do? You're not going to tell me. Jimmy's going to tell me.
Oh, sure. Well, you're going to have to go to God, but worry can be defined as evil, because that evil keeps you from keeping your mind on your great purpose in life. And that's what's bad about it.
And that purpose is? Serve God. Serve God. And take somebody with you. Very good. You know, that is the basis for the Christian fighting the devil, fighting Satan, in causing some of the problems that we have. That is the basis. Because we know, as we read the scriptures, that God tells us He's going to take care of us. All you got to do is just turn everything over to me.
When he was preaching, he had birds and grass and everything, flowers that he could use, the lilies of the field, as an example to tell us all this is taken care of, I'm going to take care of you.
Absolutely. If I'll take care of one of these, why wouldn't I take care of you?
Absolutely. Verse 33, seek first the kingdom. I mean, that's your formula.
Matthew 6, 25 through 34. I think this is where you're headed. Verse 20, 25. Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? And then verse 27. Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. There's a question in that scripture. And that question is, if that's how God does this, which is here today and not tomorrow, and then he says, you of little faith. You of little faith. And so I ask you then, is it conceivable to you, that we live a happier, less worrisome, I'm not going to say worry-free. I'm not going to be trapped into that. Less worrisome life if we draw closer to God.
Worry, you don't worry about things that mean nothing to you. The more you love a person or something, the more you worry about. You mentioned children, your children. Those that are dear to you. You worry about them, but the thing about little, what I'm saying there, little faith, it's a matter of where your faith is. If you're going to depend on yourself to take care of all the problems, and you leave God out of the equation, you're a person of little faith, because your faith is in yourself taking care of these things, and you know that you can't. You're at a disadvantage because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what kind of problem it's going to be or how big it's going to be. And so you worry. But if you're a person of great faith, you let God take care of that. You, like he's talking about the lilies of the field and all of that, they don't worry. And God takes care of them. But the closer a person is to God, and he turns everything over to God. I think myself, I believe that the closer you are to God, the more God is in your lap, and the more he takes care of you. You see a lot of rich people and wealthy people and people that just have everything that are the worst kind of person in the world. And you see people that are godly, and they are very poor, and you would think that God is taking better care of that person that is wealthy, but that's not the case. God gives you what you need when you need it, and it doesn't have anything to do with the things of this world. It's the spiritual. It's the spiritual.
I appreciate that comment. I think that's where we're trying to go with this, is that as you draw closer to God, the physical and mental problems that we have with this life are pushed further and further from our life. I mentioned that I was not going to say worry-free, but less worrisome. Would anybody like to hazard a guess as why I would say that?
We should be worried about our spiritual state, especially if we're living in sin. That should be okay. Something that we're always trying to improve.
Okay. Anyone else? Bruce?
Well, your relationship with people, if you're a Christian, should be good, but not always. But you also will have a forgiving heart, which does stop a lot of worrying in relationship with people.
Good.
And also with God, as you get closer to God, it's a continual pathway. You can see yourself getting closer in maturity, and it brings a lot of peace to you. Because God brings you peace.
You know, I think you're on to something, but my question is, as I draw closer to God, is that going to keep me from having worries? Hold on just one second. I find it interesting to note that there are 25 or 30 scriptures in the New Testament alone about worry. And I wonder why it would be mentioned so many times if it wasn't a problem. Go ahead.
Well, I may get in trouble, but I do.
No, you don't get in trouble. Only if people around the world are listening.
Never mind. No, I think there's a difference between worry and concern.
Sure.
Because God just said, what Brother Jimmy, that worry is a sin. It is a lack of faith. And we're all going to, you know, we all have to strive for that. But we're supposed to have the faith and the trust to turn to the Lord. But we're going to have concern. And sometimes we mix that up because I may have concern over I got in a car accident, I don't have insurance, or something. I'm going to pray to God about that. I'm going to do the steps that I can, and I'm going to trust that it's going to work out. But I'm still going to be tenacious with my prayer. He talks about that tenaciousness, and I'm going to go to Him, and I'm going to keep turning it over to Him. But once we turn it over to Him, we have to start letting loose. So I don't think that that's a sin, you know,
being
to be
concerned
about people and things, and because we're living in this world. But to be able to turn it over to God, I think that if we're worriers that turn it over to God and keep hanging on to it, I think that our faith is wavering. I think that it's a matter of faith.
I don't know why you think you would get in trouble for saying that. Because there is, I think we get kind of mixed up every once in a while using the terms worry and concern. I mean, it's just something that we just kind of throw in there, and even though you're concerned, you say, well, I'm worried about this or I'm worried about that. It may not be worry. It may be concern. But here's the real problem. Ordinary worry, ordinary concern is an occasional part of our life. I mean, we just have to live with that. It's an occasional part of our life. However, chronic worry is a dysfunctional relationship with somebody and something. If you are a chronic worrier, you have a dysfunctional relationship with God. And you have a dysfunctional relationship with your spouse or with your family or with your friends. If you can't get over that, if your whole life is built around worry and or concern, and there's no room for anything else in your life, then you're living a dysfunctional life. There's something wrong with you, and you need to get it fixed. I give an example, and I want to apologize before I even start to any pregnant women in the room. But this is my Lindsay won't leave. And Amanda, anybody else that haven't told us yet? That was supposed to be funny. We'll say that you have a newborn child, and your newborn child has jaundice. And she's a nurse. She knows what we're talking about. Most of you do. And so this child has jaundice, and the pediatrician walks in the hospital, and my wife says, well, what are we going to do? And the pediatrician says, well, 99% of the time, be treated with light. So we'll just shine a bright light on him, and after 2 or 3 days, everything will be fine. Is that right? And then she says, what if that doesn't work? And the pediatrician says, well, we may need to do a transfusion. And my wife's like this. And the next question is, what if the blood's bad? What happens? What can happen? And pediatrician says, well, that's just not going to happen. We screen our blood. We do all that kind of stuff. 99%, no problem. What if we're in the 1%? Well, you can get HIV. You could get AIDS. And here my wife is thinking, okay, I got a 5-hour-old child who may have to live with HIV or hepatitis or AIDS for the rest of their life. What if? That is chronic worrying. You see what I'm saying? That's the difference between a passing thought and just trying to dwell on something for so long it just drives you crazy. You know, my wife is 30 minutes late from the grocery store. I start getting kind of concerned, you know. I'm just that kind of guy. I'm just right down the line crazy. I'm telling you. I want to know that she's safe and she's okay. She's not, she's challenged technologically. You with me? She's technologically challenged. That's the politically correct word for it. So she has one of those old flip phones, and she turns it on before she goes out the house, and she turns it off when she steps back in the house. And so theoretically, I want to call her and check and make sure she's okay if she's late. Well, so what do? I pull out my smartphone. And I call her up, and it rings and rings and rings and goes to voicemail. Well, now I'm a little more concerned. And so I leave a message. Call me when you get this. 30 minutes later, she pulls in the carport. And I said, did you not get my telephone call? And she said, it was so far in my purse I couldn't find it. You know, I'm thinking, why do you even have a phone? Why do you have a phone? And that's women. I mean, that's women, guys. You know, you can't depend on them. You just cannot depend on them. Three questions. I've got 5 minutes, and I'm going to give you your deal here. Three questions. If you were told that a neighbor never worries about his kids, what would you think that was, a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad thing.
Bad thing? I mean, Ray, no, how are we going to do this? All right, this is this side and this is this side. On this side, raise your hand if you think it's a bad thing. Yeah, if they don't worry about their children, how many of you think that's a bad thing? Okay, over here. Good thing. Good thing. See, y'all, it's a trick question because you can't win. Well, what kind of guy or woman, what my neighbor, what kind of person does not worry about their kids? And then we just got through saying, don't worry about it. Let God handle it. Number two, would you like to be known as someone who does not worry about his kids? Yes or no? Yes. You would like to be someone who does not worry about their kids. I'm going to reread it. Would you like to be known as someone who doesn't worry about their kids? Yes or no? Yes? No. Yes? No. All right. Third question. If your significant other, Scott, that's you. If your significant other said to you, I don't think you ever worry about me, would you take that as a complaint or a compliment? Yes. Yeah, that's like my wife asking me, do I look fat in this dress? No, honey. You see, we get caught up in these kinds of things. We try to figure out if we're being right or we're being wrong or what does other people think about what I do or what I say. And the only thing that we really need to concentrate on is what does God do in my life? Where is He? If I've got a two-story house, is God on the second floor while I'm on the first floor? Or are we watching TV together? Are we having dinner together? Do we say our prayers together? When I look in the mirror, scary. When I look in the mirror, do I ask myself, what am I going to worry about today? Don't attack your worries when you first get out of bed and when you go to bed at night. Reserve a time. I'm telling you, fight fire with fire. Pick a time. Maybe it's during your lunch hour. Take 10 minutes during your lunch hour. Look at your list of worries and say, okay, how am I going to fix this? Can it be fixed? Can it be fixed? And if it can't, how is it going to control my life? And when you come back to that answer, because you're going to say, it can't control my life because I don't know what's going to happen. Then you just mark it off. And that's one less worry you got to deal with this week. Pick you 10 minutes during the day. And I promise you that if you will write it down and you will approach it, you will attack it, and you will do it with prayer and sincerity in your heart, you will kill it. You will kill it. Matthew 6, 25 through 34. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. Romans 8, 38 and 39. Philippians 4, 6 and 7. Luke 12, 24 and 34. Matthew 11. 28 through 30. John 14, 27. Colossians 3, 15. 2 Thessalonians 3:16, Psalms 55:22, Proverbs 12:25, 1 Peter 5:6-8, Psalms 23:4, Hebrews 13:5-6, Psalms 56:3. I cannot begin to tell you how much I enjoy teaching this class. And I can't begin to tell you that everything that we say and do in this class, we pray that we always put God first and foremost in our hearts. Thank you for your time.